Hello and welcome back to Spinal Cast. I'm your host, David Stevens, and joining us today is Scott Hogsett. Scott is a three-time Paralympic wheelchair rugby medalist and motivational speaker. He's played wheelchair rugby for 20 years, 11 of which were with Team USA in the Paralympics. Scott, thanks so much for joining us.
Oh, thank you so much for having me on and allow me to share my story.
Of course. You know, I think the goal for today's episode is really, one, to kind of give our audience a little bit of insight into who you are, kind of introduce them to yourself, but also, you know, give an introduction to the world of wheelchair rugby, which I think, at least for me, it was, you know, a surprising sport to dive into. And so this should be quite a bit of fun to kind of, you know, learn a little bit more.
Yep. Murder ball.
Murder ball. That's a fun way of naming it. So I think we'll just jump into some questions as long as you're cool with that, and we'll roll from there.
Yeah, let's do it.
Could you kind of go back to the beginning and give us a little rundown of your injury story? Tell us, you know, when it happened, where, how, that sort of thing, and you know, how you were injured in the first place?
Oh, yeah. To be honest, you know, I've lived a fairy tale life. And I've been very fortunate in that regard, but I did go through a very, very dark moment to get to this point. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it happened back in 1992. So that was forever ago. And so I went to an underage drinking party out at a lake cabin at Coeur d'Alene Lake in northern Idaho.
Okay.
And, you know, anytime you go to an underage drinking party, chances are something bad's going to happen. But, you know, as a freshman in college, and thought it'd be kind of fun to do with all my friends. And, you know, we were going to hang out at the cabin that night and then wake up and watch the Super Bowl. But, you know, that night we had some drinks. We were out on the back deck, which was so stupid because it was probably about 20, 22 degrees outside and freezing. But we're on the back deck. And you being kids, doing dumb stuff. And one kid, we were like horsing around. A kid was actually trying to pick a fight with me. And to make a long story short, before I knew it, he picked me up and pushed me off the deck.
Oh, my gosh.
And I fell 10 feet and landed. Yeah. And I landed on the back of my neck. And so if you feel the back of your neck, that little bump, that's exactly where I landed. Oof. On and you know, with it being winter and freezing cold outside, the ground was frozen, and so, you know, I instantly knew there was something wrong. And, you know, one second I was, you know, hanging out with my friends, standing up on the deck. Next second, I thought I was curled up in a ball, and actually my legs were out straight. So I knew there was something extremely wrong.
Ugh.
You know, there was no adults around. We were all a bunch of college kids. And so my friends didn't know exactly what to do. So, you know, I laid there for a while, but then it got...
Yeah, that's what I was wondering.
Yeah. It got so cold that they decided that, you know, it'd be better to pick me up and take me inside. So you can only imagine what that picture looked like of me being picked up and carried in and not supporting my neck.
Oh.
Because I was, at that point, I was knocked out. I know, I was knocked out cold. And so they called the paramedics, you know, after a while, because I was turning blue. And they came out and, you know, they knew there was something pretty badly wrong with me and transported me to the nearest hospital, which is about, you know, 6 hours later after the initial break of my neck. And, you know, I was not aware or awake for much of it. And next minute I woke up, you know, I was in ICU in the hospital dealing with a C5, C6 broken neck, rendering me as quadriplegic.
Wow.
Yeah.
That is, that's a tough story to swallow. You know, that's not the way you anticipated your, you know, first big college party to go, you know?
Yeah.
That's,
yeah, exactly.
That's unfortunate. So,
but, you know, Everybody has a story, right? You know, when you're quadriplegic or you have a spinal cord injury, everyone has a story, you know, and when it first happens, it is such a dark moment and you just don't know what's going to happen next, you know, that you just don't. And I immediately, you know, after ICU and then was in the I was in the hospital for 6 months.
Oh.
And a lot goes on during those 6 months in your mind. You know, it's the ultimate, you know, challenge. It's the challenge of a lifetime. And, you know, for me, I was a big time athlete before I got injured. I was a baseball player.
Yeah.
And, you know, I played all the sports, football, racquetball, golf. And, you know, and that's pretty much all I knew my whole life. And, you know, I was going off to college to play baseball. And so I needed to figure it out quick what I, you know, what's my next step in life. And my dad had actually come up to me while I was in rehab. And he was like, I know you're going through a hard time and a dark moment in your life, but you still have your brains and you're a smart guy and your brain will help you get through it. And so I just knew, you know, you know, everyone, when you break a neck, everyone goes through a grieving process, you know.
Totally.
It's like, how long are you going to go through that grieving process? And a lot of people don't ever snap out of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I had a really good support system that a lot of people behind me helped me, you know, get on track and, you know, realize that everything, you know, that happened, my broken neck and everything wasn't changeable. And, you know, you can't fix the past. And so in my mind, I was like, I've got it. You know, I've got to look forward to the future. And I'm totally in control of what's going to happen to me next. I have no control of what happened to me in the past. So I took that approach, and, you know, and kind of just took it on as the ultimate challenge and try to make myself better. And
totally,
you know, that dark moment turned into gold. And what I mean by gold, we'll probably dive into a little bit later.
Yeah, there we go.
Yeah. But, you know.
So do you feel like it took you that whole, you know, 6 months in the hospital to kind of turn that corner mentally? Or do you feel like you were, you know, struggling for the first couple of weeks and then by the end of month one, you were starting to kind of turn that corner? You know, what was the duration of your kind of shift of mindset?
Well, this is a tough, man, when you break your neck and you can't walk anymore and, you know, in your mind, live a normal life.
Right.
It took me, to be honest, a couple of years, but, you know, of physically and mentally dealing with it. You know, there's steps along the way that you kind of go through and where you realize, okay, everything is going to be all right. You know, life mm-hmm. is going to be fine. It's just going to, you're just going to live it a little differently. And, you know, I've got stories that have, you know, that I'd like to share that kind of, you know, were reminders to me where, okay, you've made it through this, you know, you're going to be okay. You're ready to move on to that next step.
Right.
And I think all of us kind of go through it and it kind of helps you realize that, you know, there's no reason to be depressed about the past and you're ready to move on. So
totally.
It doesn't happen right away. And everyone has their own timeline. And, you know, that's where the peer mentorship, which we'll talk about too a little bit later, really comes into play and helps individuals with broken necks deal with, you know, life changing moments.
Totally.
Yeah. We talk about that too.
Yeah. Let's first kind of talk about rugby. How in the world did you stumble upon wheelchair rugby? Well, how was that the sport of choice for you, or murder ball, as you mentioned before?
Yeah. Well, it was introduced to me in rehab by my rec therapist, to be honest. You know, I was so newly injured at the time and I was all baseball and able-bodied sports that I was, you know, happy that she introduced me to it, but I wasn't accepting of it yet. I just, you know, I knew it was there.
Mm-hmm.
Thought it was kind of cool wheelchair sport, but I was still in able-bodied mode. And to be honest, it wasn't until a couple of years later when I decided to move down to Phoenix, Arizona, that I ran into a guy in a bar. And he came up to me, and he was in a wheelchair as well. His name's Eddie Alexander. He's one of my close friends. He was a big-time mentor to me. He came up to me, and he's like, hey, I run a local wheelchair rugby program here in Phoenix. you know, have you ever given this some thought? And we would love for you to come out.
Yeah.
And at that time, it was like the perfect time, you know, it's a couple of years later. And I just like, yeah, heck yeah, let's do it. Hell yeah. And so I went out, you know, but the funny thing is I called my mom and I was so excited. I told her, I'm like, oh, this guy approached me. I go, I think they're looking for some speed and some real athletes, you know, in my mind, I'm that dude, you know, and like ready to get after it.
Yeah.
And, I went out to their practice and they kicked the crap out of me. And, you know, I brought me down to earth real quick. But, you know, that's what's great about the sport. You know, I went to that practice. It was a 3-hour practice and I fell in love with it. And, you know, and it made me feel like, you know, I was an athlete again. Mm-hmm. It gave me a reason to wake up. And it was a perfect fit for someone who, was an athlete before, but at the same time, I mean, wheelchair rugby athletes and athletes in general, but wheelchair athletes, you know, for me, it was the ultimate challenge because it was the sport, learning a new sport, but at the same time, dealing with my disability and trying to make those two work together. Man, it was quite the transition. It was hard, extremely hard, and this, you know.
Totally.
And it worked out well for me. It just took a long time to get there. But for me, mentally, I got to wake up every morning knowing I get to go hit someone as hard as I want in a wheelchair. So, yeah, anytime you have that, it was the perfect fit. And, you know,
right.
It's just, it was at the time something I needed.
Yeah, totally. And I mean, I think, you know, I grew up playing baseball as well. I was a collegiate baseball player myself. And part of the reason I always was drawn to baseball was it was one of the, it's a sport that the more I played it, the more nuances I got into and the more I started to understand that, like, I will never be perfect at this game.
Yep.
This is constantly, there's constantly room for growth and improvement where practice actually felt like I was getting better. And I think, to your point, you know, having sports as an outlet for you to improve and see improvement within yourself, I think that's a huge motivator. And so I can see how you get all, you know, excited about it for sure.
Yeah, it kind of made me feel like I did back in the day, you know, like you're saying, baseball, you know, just baseball is a sport you just try to get better and better and better. And rugby is kind of the same way. What's great about that sport is, and what the athletes have is they have each other.
Mm-hmm.
What I mean by that is that everyone has a very similar disability. They all went through something pretty traumatic where they broke their necks and they're all disabled. And so they're dealing with it on a physical and mental level. And so, you know, we're all kind of like mentors to one another, not just on the court, off the court, where we, you know, we're trying to navigate through this disabled world where you're like, okay, you know, I need help with dressing, for example, I'm stuck on,
right,
how do you button your pants or something like that, you
yeah.
know, and we have each other to bounce ideas off of, and, you know, and kind of make, I don't want to say make fun of this world, but to kind of help us like mentally get through some challenges that present themselves on a daily basis for people with disabilities. It's just, it's part of it.
Right.
It's something that
you, it's, it doesn't, it's a peer away. Group.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a peer group that also happens to be running into each other in your wheelchairs. Right.
Yeah. We get to beat the hell out of one another and then we get to talk about it afterwards, you know?
Yeah, there you go. Well, speaking of beating the hell out of each other, I imagine, you know, I've had friends in college who played rugby, and always there was one of them that, you know, had a cast on or something. They were always banged up. And I can only imagine when you're swinging a metal wheelchair in there yeah. as well, that you guys must deal with injuries a lot. How does that kind of play into it?
Well, just to give everyone who hasn't seen wheelchair rugby some idea of the sports, actually, because everyone's like, oh, do you play on grass? No, we don't. We play on a basketball court, which hurts. You know, when you land on that, it hurts a lot worse than being on grass.
100%.
And it is a full chair contact sport. And so, you know, the collisions can be pretty violent at times, especially at the elite Paralympic level.
Yeah.
The hits are, they're up there. And the whole point is to kill the person with the ball. And so I've had people approach me and they're like, well, how come you don't wear a helmet or you don't wear more pads?
Yeah.
And to be honest, we're just like any other athlete. You know, we're not playing this sport to get injured. But injuries do happen. We know how to protect ourselves. For me, I've been playing for, 25 plus years. And I've had broken fingers. I've had my right shoulder. They blew 6 holes in it and reconstructed my clavicle.
Oh, geez.
And so, like, but that's just the typical athlete, Like, mm-hmm. It's as weird as it sounds, I don't want to be injured. No one wants to be injured. But if you're not playing a sport at the highest level and playing as hard as you can, then you're not. Injuries are just going to happen as part of any sport, man. And
yeah, totally.
They suck. They suck. But it's a weird mental thing. It kind of makes you feel like you're alive. The sport does.
Yeah.
The injuries and the risks you take are really worth it.
Part of that. Yeah. Totally. Yeah. So. I guess my question on top of that then is, someone like you who's a quadriplegic or, potentially someone who doesn't have a whole lot of feeling in their legs and things like that, are there times in which you get injuries that you aren't fully aware of getting? How do you make sure, I shattered my femur last night and I had no idea. Now my leg is the size of a watermelon. How do you ensure that you guys haven't hurt something that you can't necessarily feel?
I'll share a story with you. So,
okay.
Several years ago, I decided to go skydiving. And it was New Year's Eve. And there was another buddy on my rugby team. He's like, oh, let's go.
Yeah.
It's just something we both wanted to do. And we went out to this place in the west side of Phoenix. Which we should have went to this other one that's a little bit more popular, but we went to this ghetto place. And we went out there and we're like, well, we're going to skydive. And so we talked to them and they're like, oh, we take people with disabilities all the time. And this the guy who I went up with, he's like, oh, I took a quadriplegic, blah, blah, blah. And so, and I'm like, oh, I felt pretty secure. And I'm like, let's do this. And so, we signed our life away and all this paperwork, that if something was to happen to us, we wouldn't sue them. But so we go out there and we go out to the plane and it's just this little 2-seater plane. And these guys are just, they're part of this whole organization. They're just a bunch of adrenaline junkies. And
totally.
They're really nice guys. But, they're just like, let's do this. Let's go. So we go out to this plane and we go to get in. And I'm like, why does the pilot have a parachute on? And he's like, well, you just never know, man. And I'm like, you never know what? He's like, you just never know. I'm like, oh, And so we go and they go to start the plane and it didn't start the first 2 times. And it finally started on the 3rd try. And the guy, they all celebrate. They're like, normally it takes about 6 or 7 times to get it to start. I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm going to die. Yeah. Like, what are we doing?
Turn around.
What are we doing? Yeah, this is the stupidest idea ever. But so we get in the plane and we go up there. And the way it works is people with disabilities and whose legs don't work, they duct tape our legs together. And so then they strap us on to the front of the dude who's tandem jumping with us.
Mm-hmm.
And then we free fall. And then right before we land, he loosens up the tension, then I pull my knees up to my chest, then we slide in. And so we get all the way up to we're in jumping altitude, and they open the door, and they're like, well, swing your legs out. And I'm like, I wasn't hooked on to anyone yet.
Yeah.
And they're like, and then this guy whispers in my ear, I'm about ready to tandem jump with, he goes, to be honest, the last quadriplegic I took was about 13 years ago. And I'm like, what? I'm like, 13 years ago? But yeah. And so we finally hook on. We do this weird little backflip out of the plane. And to be honest, the the free fall was insane. It was so much fun.
Yeah.
I loved every, because I had bungee jumped like the year before.
Right.
And that was terrifying. That's terrifying. That's a whole nother story. But, you know, and so we're free falling. We go, and the guy's like, I cannot loosen the tension. He's like, after the parachute opened, I'm like, what? And so my other buddy, who's quadriplegic, he had jumped with this other dude, and his chute came out in a knot.
Oh, gosh.
And so, like, but I didn't know it at the time because they were way ahead of us. And I'm like yelling because we are probably, I don't know, 200 yards off of the ground. And I'm yelling at all them that I'm like, catch us, you know, because the guy, I'm looking at my buddy Andy, who's quadriplegic, and he's like filthy, dirty. And because they hit hard because they had to go to the second chute. I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm going to die. And so the funny, yeah. And so to end it, that we never got my legs up. So all of the guy who I was tandem with, all of his weight and my weight came down on my right leg and snapped it. And so, oh, I know. And the weird thing is, you know, when you don't have sensation and feel it perfect, there is kind of like a little twinge that maybe knew that something was wrong, and that I immediately went into cold sweats. And these guys were so dumb. They're like, oh, because it swelled up to the size of a watermelon. And they're like, oh, that's good because it only swells when it's a sprain. I'm like, what? And so, yeah. And so it was massive. And by that time, I knew. I drove myself actually to the emergency room.
Oh, my gosh.
Before I went into shock and got in there. And yeah, I'd broken my fibula and tibia. And it was just a mess. But, you know, makes for a good story. That's for sure.
Yeah, that's a heck of a story. For sure. You know, maybe not a highly rated skydiving spot in Arizona.
No, do not go out to the west side of Phoenix, Arizona to go skydiving. Do not do it.
Well, let's talk about, so you obviously, you won 3 medals at 3 consecutive Paralympic Games. And, you know, as far as being an athlete is concerned, I think meddling in the Olympics is probably the top of the top kind of achievement that someone can achieve. What was that experience like? And just kind of how did you feel when you finally were adorned with that medal?
Well, the gold medal is the ultimate. You know, I felt like I reached the pinnacle of our sport, and which myself, my team,
yeah,
and everyone involved, we're very fortunate to get there. And I was lucky, to be honest, to play with some really good athletes, some really good coaches over the years, and a very good support system. My wife, who allowed me to travel all over the world forever, and, you know, to chase this dream of winning a gold medal in the Paralympics.
Right.
You know, it was definitely a journey to get there. It's so difficult, and there's so many good Paralympic athletes in this world, and Team USA is a very difficult Team USA wheelchair rugby. That program is very difficult to, first of all, make the team, mm-hmm. and second of all to maintain your position on the team. And so I felt like I was always testing myself just in trying to keep myself in the best shape ever, just to hold my spot on the team. And then once I realized in everything, especially at the 2004 Paralympics in Athens, Greece, where we choked and won a bronze medal.
Yeah.
But it's okay. That bronze looks pretty good when I spray painted gold. But, oh, yeah. But, you know, I learned a lot in the 2004 games. I learned that I never want to take third again.
Yep.
And I also learned, you know, I was a rookie, and I was just, it was making my debut, and I knew I wanted to have a bigger part. Shortly after, I became captain of the U.S. team and kind of directed and helped, you know, all of the team get on the same page. And, you know, just like I said, very fortunate to get there. But everyone's like, oh, how's your gold medal and your bronze medals and all that? And what I try to tell people is those medals are amazing. But for the most part, I have those medals locked away, and, you know, I take them out maybe once or twice a year, mm-hmm. when I go do speaking engagements, or, you know, I talk to schools, or someone, you know, has requested to see it. But the one thing I tell people is, like, I don't carry those medals in my back pocket, meaning that, you know, the journey is almost just as important as those medals, meaning the stories to get to those gold medals.
Totally.
And we should, and that group of 12 that went to Beijing in 2008 to win a gold medal, man, the relationships, the friendships that we made, and the stories that we made along the way, it's just like a group of guys that were willing to push through a wall to get to that medal.
Yeah.
And what's unique about that gold medal team is that the Team USA has not won a gold medal since. And so, you know, and that goes to show you how hard it is to get to that point and to actually win it.
Yeah.
They've been close. They finished, you know, they've won several silver medals, but never a Paralympic gold medal. And so that's the 12 of us kind of have this, this bond with one another that we've done something that the, you know,
nobody else has done.
Wheelchair, exactly.
Yeah.
And, can't take it away from you.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
Well, let's kind of transition then from the world of rugby, kind of the pinnacle of your athletic career, to more so, you know, as you kind of have gotten older and transitioned out of playing so much, where you're doing some coaching and mentorship, and you kind of, you know, I know you've worked through the Barrow Connector peer mentorship program, and things like that. So if you wanted to just kind of talk a little bit about how you transitioned from sport to these kind of mentorships.
Yeah, you know, I've always been a mentor ever since I was discharged from the hospital. And reason being is that when I, you know, did my 6 month stint in rehab, mm-hmm. transitioning from the able body world to the wheelchair world, I had a guy, his name's Chad Barrington. He's no longer with us, but he came in and he was very similar in injury, and he had a huge impression, left a huge impression on me. And so to be honest, he only came in and saw me once, and I realized that, you know, that it was so nice of him, but it wasn't enough. Like, I would have really enjoyed it if he could have seen me two or three times, but
right.
You know, I was just appreciative that he came in and saw me. And so once that happened, I realized, you know, I've got to give back, and I've got to be that person that goes in and sees the newly injured. A lot of people call me an ambulance chaser. I don't want to say I go that far, but, you know, if there's not a dude who breaks his neck that I don't know about it in this state. But so I like to, you know, like I said before, everyone has their own timeline to how they heal in rehab. So I kind of pick the moments when I go and visit them for the first time, because there's a lot of people that are reluctant or still have the mentality that, you know, I'm going to walk. And so they're not ready to see someone like myself. But
totally.
So I give it time. But then, you know, working with Barrow Neurological Institute and Rehabilitation, the therapist there contact me. They're like, hey, he's ready. Would you like to come down? And so I always make sure I go down there. And, you know, I try to be the light at the end of the tunnel and talk to them about what they can do, because in their mind, it's all about what they can't do, right?
Right.
Because that's kind of the mentality. And, you know, let them know, like, you know, it's going to be all right. It's going to be a process. It's going to take time, but you can get there. And, you know, I'm here to help you. And, you know, and everyone needs a mentor. And so I usually try to get in there and see them in the beginning and see them at the end. But it's, rehab stays are so different now. They're in there for 6 to 8 weeks total.
Wow.
Where insurance, you know, you break your neck. Insurance just pays basically to get you up, moving, and they get you out of the hospital right away.
Right.
And that's where a mentor is even more important, just because, man, after 8 weeks, these guys are nothing. They're still really bedridden and trying to transition to make their lives better.
Right.
So, yeah. So, I go in there, try to spend as much time as possible and give them some insight and give them some tips on how to transition. And I've probably worked with over 500 patients over the years.
Wow.
You know, it's one of those things. I feel like it's not about me. It's about making everyone around me better.
Yeah.
And hopefully it does. Yeah.
Well, and I think that, you know, it takes a lot of time and effort and thought and commitment from you. You know, how are you able to, I mean, is it solely the driving force of, like, you remember when you were in that place that is driving you to do this for others? Or, you know, how else do you stay motivated to constantly put forth so much time and effort?
Well, to this day, I can still remember that very first practice that I played in wheelchair rugby, that very first hit when someone hit me.
Yeah.
And the electricity and the excitement that went through me. And that's kind of, you know, that wheelchair rugby saved my life.
Mm-hmm.
And so if it could have that same impact on others who have been recently injured, and if I can help them get to that point where it puts a smile on their face, then mission accomplished. You know, I've done everything I possibly can in this sport, taking it as high as possible. Now it's time for me to allow others to, you know, to enjoy it and to have that feeling of what I went through, you know, 28 years ago when I first took the court. And it's so awesome to see them smile and do all that.
Yeah.
I've been running my club team here in Phoenix since 1998, which is wild to even think about. and that's why, like, I spend a lot of time down in the rehabs trying to get these guys who break their necks that don't know what's going to happen. I don't want them to go home and sit on the sidelines and watch life go by when they can actually get involved right away, be part of the rugby program and help, you know, allow us to help mentor them to get life back to normal as soon as possible.
Totally. Well, and you provide them that, you know, outrageously valuable resource of a community of people who are experiencing maybe not the exact same thing, but something similar enough that, you know, you have some peers to work through it with. So I think that's huge.
Oh yeah, no, you're totally right. Everyone needs a mentor. We all need each other. You got to be willing to laugh at yourself once in a while and have others help you get through the process. But I'm very thankful to St. Joseph's Hospital and Barrow's Neurological Institute Rehabilitation for allowing us to be. They've been a big time sponsor of my club team. And
awesome.
We kind of, you know, we help each other out. And it's just really great to have that. And a hospital that big behind our program is wonderful. And
yeah.
We're at Ability 362 here in Phoenix, Arizona, which I don't know if you know much about, but
no.
You know, it's like a jewel hidden here in Phoenix where it's a state-of-the-art sports complex dedicated to the disabled. And,
awesome.
And yeah, it gives these guys who recently break their necks, you know, they get discharged, they got nowhere to go. Like, when I got discharged out of the hospital after 6 weeks or 6 months, I mean, I had nowhere to go but back to my house. And
right.
Now they've got Ability 360, they can transition right away into that type of setting, and they can make themselves better, not just physically, but mentally. And Just very fortunate to have that as well.
Awesome. Well, I've got two more questions for you here, and then I think we're probably going to wrap up.
Awesome.
But one of them being, you know, I know you were recently awarded, you know, the Arizona Sports Hall of Fame, which is an incredible honor. I guess, what was that like, and how did that all kind of go down?
Oh man, to be the first Paralympic athlete inducted in the Arizona Sports Hall of Fame, when I got that phone call, it was like surreal.
Yeah.
Honestly, it was surreal. You know, they don't just induct anyone. It's not like, oh, we're inducting you because you're such a great athlete. It's the fact that you're a well-rounded athlete. And what I mean by that is it's not just my accomplishments on the court, but my accomplishments off the court. And it's giving back to the community and you know, mentoring and working with others, and
totally
just trying to make everyone better around me. And you know, it's to be in a Hall of Fame that has, you know, Randy Johnson, Phil Mickelson, Jake Plummer, Shane Doan, you know,
that's pretty cool.
I'm the luckiest. Yeah, man.
And, that's a pretty cool group to be a part of, for sure.
Yeah, Larry Fitzgerald. And it's just, it's the ultimate reward in the fact that I put so much, you know, time and work in, but I can't get to where I'm at without my team and the players that I've been with. And they all help make me look good, and my coaches and my wife, family, my mom and everyone. I've just been lucky in the fact that I have a support system. And at the same time, it's all about mentality, man. It's all about if you're willing to, you know, go through that dark period in time where you break your neck and you don't know what's out there, because everyone is going to be challenged with adversity at some point in their life, right?
Right.
Everyone is. And it's what you do with that adversity, how you handle it and allow it to make you a better person. That's what it's all about. And to take the challenges head on, and because you never know what's going to happen, right?
Exactly.
It's like, why not do it? And for me, I was fortunate. Like I said, it turned into a gold medal, and then to be inducted into Arizona Sports Hall of Fame is pretty special.
Incredible. Incredible. Well, I think the last kind of question here is really, a little bit of a self-plug, but if anyone in the audience is interested in, connecting with you or supporting the work that you do, where can they go and how can they, get more involved with the Scott Hogsett world?
Well, the best part is I'm pretty much out there. A lot of people can contact Facebook me or, through Facebook Messenger. My email is scotthogsett8@gmail.com. People have contacted me through there. Mm-hmm. And, what I tell everyone is don't be afraid to reach out. Don't be afraid to contact me. I'll try to do my best to get back to you and help mentor you as much as possible and try to help, transition into this world and try to make your life as easy as possible and allow you to see what you can do instead of what you can't do.
Fantastic. Well, I mean, I think that's all that I had, kind of prepped for us today. It's been incredible to speak with you. I think what you do is provide an outlook on spinal cord injury that very few people are able to really kind of portray. I think it's really cool, not only the accomplishments you've made in the sports world, but also on a personal level. And, finding ways that you can continue to give back to this community that has, become a part of who you are. And I just think it's incredible. So thank you for all of that you do for this community.
Oh, thank you so much. And I love sharing my story. And hopefully I wasn't too wordy, but I love sharing it and trying to help as many people as possible.
No, that sounds great. I do want to do a quick shout out everyone who's watching this on YouTube or listening on your favorite podcast platform. I urge you, come on, give us a follow, a subscription, all of those things help the numbers. You can always hit the bell icon on YouTube so that you know when new episodes drop. But other than that, Scott, thanks again. And we'll see everybody next month.